Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, back again. Sadie's back, tell a friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, preview all the games this Sunday in the NFL. I'll also let you know which games are the most interesting, the biggest games to watch this weekend in the NFL. And I'll give you my picks for the football weekend coming up an hour from now. Plus, some thoughts on Notre Dame. It is a football Friday. If we have some time, some thoughts on Zion Williamson as well. And we'll continue to get ready for Alabama, Georgia, and all the other conference championships. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, what a weekend it is. We have the conference championships in college football. And in the NFL, once that calendar flips to December and we're in the final quarter of the season, these games only become even more important. And then selfishly, it's my first weekend off since August. So that's nice. And that's not me complaining because, I love my football seasons and calling the games and broadcasting and traveling and all that sort of stuff. But for the first time in 3 months, all I have is football viewing for the weekend. Now, last weekend on Sunday, we had the Citadel against South Carolina State, and they played in Orangeburg. So it worked out that my Minnesota Vikings were playing at 4:30, and the game was at 2, so it was perfect. It was a quick game because it wasn't on TV. It was radio only. And so it was a quick game. I got out of there right at kickoff. So I was listening to the game in the car, and then I had to go find a spot to watch it. You know, by the time I was going to get home, it'd be the second half, I said, nah, let me just go over to a sports bar, and I'll catch most of the game there. So Bobby, of course, from Orangeburg, I had asked him, okay, you know, is there a Buffalo Wild Wings there? Like, what's the best spot in Orangeburg, best sports bar? He had no idea. He said there probably isn't one. I said, well, that's not good. I looked it up the night before on Saturday. Before, you know, I went up on my own on Sunday. I was doing a down and back, just a commuter. It's only, whatever, just over an hour away. So I looked it up on Saturday. I said, okay, what's the best sports bar in Orangeburg? I want to, hopefully there's one close to the campus. I could get there quickly, catch almost the full game. And I found on Yelp, they had a top 10 list of the best sports bars, at least around Orangeburg. And the first few I saw were all closed on Sunday. One of them was not open, it said, until Tuesday. Another one doesn't open again till Wednesday. How can you call yourself a sports bar? You're closed on the weekends. This was on Saturday. And it said it was closed Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It doesn't open again till Tuesday. What kind of restaurant is that? You're open only half the week and not even on the weekends.
Well, did you check out Bobby's favorite place he likes us to pronounce correctly?
No, what's that?
What is it? It was spelled P-E-L-I-O-N. Now, how would you pronounce it if you saw it that way?
Oh, was this the school? P-E-L-I-O-N?
Well, yeah, it's a little town in Orangeburg County.
Oh, it's a
as
town?
Well. Yes.
I would say, what did I say? Pelion?
Yes.
Right.
Okay, well, let's see if Bobby bursts in here with a corrupt pronunciation.
Yeah, did you
check out that little place?
No, I did not. I mean, maybe I drove through it. I have no idea.
Okay, you checked out north.
I don't know what I checked out. I was just trying to find a sports bar. There was nothing around.
Or you could have stopped on the way just before exiting Orangeburg County in Holly Hill.
I ended up going to the closest Buffalo Wild Wings. I looked it up, and at this point, I probably could have just went all the way home, but it was like 50 minutes away. I think it was in Somerville or something.
Yeah, Cane Bay.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that one just opened.
It was really nice, and it was the closest one, and I thought, yeah, I'll just go there. I hadn't eaten all day either, so I said I could go home and have some leftovers and watch the game. Let me go to the sports bar. So I had to drive, you know, I had to go an hour away. Orangeburg, the closest sports bar to Orangeburg is an hour away. Are you kidding me? And the bars they had, I don't know if they even have Sunday ticket to get the game. They're not open until Tuesday and Wednesday of the week. What are you doing? So then I got to the bar to go watch the Vikings. Of course, they lost. And there were three games on in that late window. This is going back to Sunday. If you can think back all the way, you know, what was going on Sunday afternoon. I saw plenty of Packers fans, unfortunately. They were very obnoxious as their team was winning. I saw Charger fans. The Chargers played the Broncos. There were Bronco fans there. There was a 49ers fan there. I was the only Vikings fan in the whole building. I didn't see a Rams fan, so that was the other team that wasn't represented. Of the six teams playing, there were fans of four of the six teams. No fans in the building, and it was, you know, it's a big spot. A lot of people were there. It was pretty packed. No Rams fans, and, of course, no Vikings fans. I was all by myself, and they lost. So we've heard from some Vikings fans in the area. I know, I'm sure there's not many in South Carolina, but there were plenty of Packer fans there that day. And also, I was surprised. I mean, we've got a Charger fan, no Vikings fan. And I saw them lost. And I thought, well, this was just all around. This was brutal. I had to drive an hour to get to the closest sports bar. They lose anyways. I'm all by myself. I have to hear the Packer fans were all cheering the whole time as they were beating up the Rams. This weekend, which brought this whole conversation up, I'm off this weekend. I don't have to worry about it. I can sit at home and watch the game in peace, and hopefully the Vikings will win.
And, of course, Bobby Eadie, I think he's going to take you slagging his hometown lying down.
I don't know, come up with a – have Bobby go open up a sports bar over there. I'm just speaking facts.
Yeah, he used to own one. Yeah. He used to own one in West Ashley.
Yeah, well, go open one in Orangeburg because they're desperate for one.
Okay, now is it funnier Jerry Lawler's joke about Orangeburg? They had to buy a giant mirror to make it look bigger.
Yeah, and they need something over there. They need. Let's start with a sports bar. Closest one's an hour away. You want to go watch the game, you got to get in the car, drive an hour just to get some buffalo wings.
Speaking of games and championship games, we talked a bit off the air. Yeah. You think one overlooked championship game will be the Sun Belt title game between Appalachian State and Louisiana. Now, yeah. They already played.
Yeah,
Louisiana kind of ran circles around it, but a lot of people who watched the game thought App State just went out and played sloppy. Mm-hmm. So do you think this will be a tighter game this time around?
Well, it better be. What? Bobby's
now he's here. Yeah, he heard you slagging his hometown. Now, how do you pronounce P-E-L-I-O-N?
Pelion. I mean, how many times I got to tell you? By the way, you asked me, where's the place I can watch the game in Orangeburg? And what did I say?
You said your cousin's
house. I said, there's probably not one.
Yeah.
I say, you probably be the closest in Somerville, didn't I?
Yeah, you nailed it.
That's exactly what you did.
Yeah.
Don't be cracking on my hometown.
You think?
And no, I'm not opening a sports bar in Orangeburg.
You would clean up. You'd have no competition. The closest competition would be an hour away. People will be coming 30 minutes to your sports bar.
Maybe I'll open one in Pelion.
Yeah, go ahead. You open that sports bar, and the next time the Citadel plays South Carolina State, I will be there instead of driving an hour to Somerville. Missed the whole first half. Just driving in the car. All right, every Friday we preview, speaking of the NFL, we preview the big games, all the games, on the NFL schedule by running through them one for the games coming up this weekend. Let's get to it now. Run through these games. Preview what's going to happen in the NFL.
Dallas Cowboys at New Orleans Saints.
We always start by looking back at the Thursday night game last night. I gave my thoughts to begin. For one, Dak Prescott still hasn't been good enough of late. He's just 20th in the league in QBR. He was good enough to win yesterday, but in large part because of the job by the Cowboys defense and the turnovers that they forced, which they can do when they play with a lead against a quarterback like Taysom Hill. That was a good matchup for Dallas and their defense. For the Saints, I don't know what you see in Taysom Hill. He should never be another, you know, he should start another game at quarterback ever again in his career. He's not an NFL quarterback. He's a gadget player. He could be a wide receiver for you. He's not a franchise quarterback. Sean Payton has lost five in a row for the first time in his career. The Saints have fallen under 500. And as I said at the start of the year, the Saints are this year's Patriots. You lose a Hall of Fame quarterback, you struggle to adjust. I said they're going to have a losing season. So far, so good on that front. And by the way, now teams are 4-0 when their coach has to miss a game because of COVID. I don't know what that says about the coaches or the teams. Maybe head coaches aren't as important in the NFL as we think. But teams now over the last 2 years, 4-0 when their coach is unavailable because of COVID. The Cowboys won last night without Mike McCarthy.
Los Angeles Chargers at Cincinnati Bengals.
I love this as a bounce back spot for the Chargers. Now they're on the road against the Bengals, but the Chargers on the road for the second straight week. You know, that doesn't help. The Chargers, they've lost. They lost last week by double digits to the Broncos, played poorly. The Bengals, meanwhile, blew out the Steelers. You couldn't play any better. Now, Cincinnati's home for the second straight week. The Chargers have to travel for the second straight week. But it goes back to my theory, at least from a betting perspective, you know, just bet on the team that didn't cover the week prior against the team that did. For the Bengals, you can only go down from last week, right? You can only expect a letdown after the beatdown they handed to Pittsburgh. And the Chargers have been really up and down. They've been inconsistent. But they were on the road against Denver last week. Denver is a top 10 defense. The Bengals, not so much. So here's a chance for Herbert and the Chargers to try to bounce back. For Cincinnati, you win this game, you get to 8-4. You beat another team with a winning record here back-to-back weeks. Right? Then we really, and I probably say this every week, but you really have to start taking Cincinnati seriously. But I think this is a spot where the Chargers bounce back after last week's loss, and they actually get the win. And the Bengals have a little bit of a letdown after their dominant victory against the Steelers last week.
Minnesota Vikings at Detroit Lions.
This has all the makings of the Lions getting their first win of the year. I have been a long-suffering Vikings fan. I am conditioned to expect the worst. So you have the Vikings going to Detroit. The Lions have extra time to get ready after playing on Thanksgiving. They're 0-10-1, but five of those losses were by one score. Right? They've had a lot of close games. The Vikings don't have Dalvin Cook. So if there was ever a time for the Lions to get their first win of the season, it would probably be against the Vikings. I can remember back when the Lions went 0-16, their two games against the Vikings were their two closest games of the year. One of the games was when Dan Orlovsky ran out of the back of the end zone for a safety, and if I remember correctly, I think the Vikings only won by two. That was the difference in the game. And the second time, when they played them in Detroit, because that safety play was in Minnesota, when they played them in Detroit, if I remember correctly, it also took like a field goal in the last minutes to beat them. They were the two. I remember watching those games. I remember where I was at a sports bar in town. I didn't have to drive an hour. And I remember thinking as we were watching the game, like, oh, my God, we're going to be the only team to lose to the Lions this year. So here we are. The Vikings go to Detroit. Lions have extra time to get ready. It's a divisional game. No Dalvin Cook. The Vikings are favored by seven. They should win by double digits. They're the far superior team. But being a Vikings fan for multiple decades, I expect this is the time when the Lions get their only win of the season, beating the Vikings at home on Sunday.
New York Giants at Miami Dolphins.
It just came down since we've been on the air. Daniel Jones ruled out because of that neck injury. So Mike Glennon gets the start for the Giants. Exciting football. Two losing teams, and it's Glennon against Tua. So for the Giants, this just continues for them. They can't stay healthy. Now it's the quarterback. It was Barkley. It was the wide receivers. Shepard, Galladay, Tony. It's been the offensive line. Now it has affected the quarterback. So this is a depleted Giants team. They go on the road to Miami, and if you're a Panthers fan, you watch Miami put the beat down. They gave you the business last week. Tua's playing better. But if you zero in on the numbers for Tua, it's a lot of RPO stuff, and it's a lot of short passing. He has not been good throwing down the field. So they've made things very simple on Tua. Run-pass option also makes it much easier on the quarterback. They're making it very simple on Tua, but guess what? Over the past month, he has the second-best quarterback rating in the NFL. He's got the number one completion percentage. He's been playing really well. They're not asking a lot from him, but he is a young quarterback. He's not his 10th year in the league. Remember when Russell Wilson first came in the league, they weren't asking very much from him. A lot of young quarterbacks, you have to ease them in. So the Dolphins finally simplified things for Tua. He is playing well. Miami's won four in a row. They now get the Giants and their backup quarterback at home. You win this game. Dolphins are 6-7. Now, the AFC is better than the NFC, but we still have seven teams that need to go to the playoffs. And that would be five straight wins. You'd be 6-7. You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but look out. Maybe the Dolphins can creep back into at least the playoff conversation in the AFC. This is a game you have to win, though, at home against Mike Glennon, who hasn't won a game. I think it's in like 5 years. He hasn't won a game he started in the NFL. This is a must-win for the Dolphins, and we'll see if Tua can continue to play well.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Atlanta Falcons.
This could be a big weekend for the Falcons, and I'll explain why. Kenny Pickett is playing tomorrow for Pittsburgh. Maybe he's the guy to target for the Falcons. The Falcons play the Buccaneers on Sunday. They're 11-point underdogs at home. So Vegas expects this to be ugly. And Tom Brady against Matt Ryan over the years, or Buccaneers against the Falcons with Tom Brady, has been pretty ugly. Matt Ryan's never beaten Tom Brady. This is why it could be an important weekend. If Pickett goes out there and plays well, maybe the Falcons like what they see. Could he be the next guy? I heard, I think it was Louis Riddick of ESPN. He's on Monday Night Football. I think he was the one that said Pickett is probably the best quarterback in this draft class, but he's not going to be ready year one. Well, we know the Falcons are still kind of stuck to Matt Ryan for next year. So what if you draft Kenny Pickett, he sits behind Matt Ryan next year, and then he becomes your franchise quarterback? And here's the other part of it. If the Falcons lose on Sunday, depending on what happens elsewhere, I know you're probably still looking at the Falcons for a playoff spot because the NFC is still wide open for those wild cards. But if the Falcons lose on Sunday, there's a chance they could get in line for the number 8 pick. This is not a great quarterback class. You could probably get a Pickett at number 8. Or if you continue to lose some games and you move further up, right, you could still get a quarterback there in that first round. Matt Ryan has the lowest QBR in the league over the last month. He's been the worst quarterback in the NFL the past month. It doesn't help that he's missing Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones isn't on the team anymore. But it's been clear. We knew this going in. It's why I said they should have drafted a quarterback this year. Matt Ryan has nothing left. He's playing as the worst quarterback over the last month. So it's a big weekend in the sense that if he struggles once again, they lose again, they can move into the top 10. And then meanwhile, if you're a Falcons fan, pay attention to that Pittsburgh game and see what you see something you like there. And maybe if things line up, we're still really far from the draft, but you start looking at, okay, maybe the Falcons can get their quarterback, their next quarterback in this year's draft. Meanwhile, for Tampa Bay, they haven't been as good on the road. Tom Brady hasn't been very good over the past month. But here's a chance against a vulnerable defense indoors, even though they're on the road, a team they've beaten up over the years, the last 2 years with Tom Brady. Here's a chance for him and that offense to get right, even without Antonio Brown.
Indianapolis Colts at Houston Texans.
The Colts just take care of business. They haven't always done that this year. They're 6-6. They've lost three games in which they blew double-digit leads this year. So maybe it's too much to ask to win all of those. You probably should. You win those three games, you hold on to three double-digit leads like last week at home when they were up by 10 in the second half against the Buccaneers, and the Colts right now could be 9-3, and we're looking at them very differently. So simply just take care of business. You're a double-digit favorite on the road against Houston, who's one of the worst teams in the league. Just go in there, put last week behind you when you coughed up another game, and take care of business. They're the better team. They should beat Houston and get back over 500. This is one of those games you can't watch every game in the NFL. It's tough. This is one of the games you can skip. They call it a corner TV game. You put it on that TV over there in the corner that you don't pay much attention to. Don't worry about this Colts-Texans game. The Colts should handle their business.
Arizona Cardinals at Chicago Bears.
So you have the Cardinals. I've seen conflicting things about Kyler Murray coming back, but the Cardinals are coming off a bye. The Bears have some extra rest. This is a game in which the Cardinals, on paper, should handle pretty easily. They're a 7.5-point favorite on the road. So they should handle it pretty easily, but teams coming off byes have actually struggled this year. And so it looks like Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins will be back. That's bad news for Chicago, but they have to go to Chicago. We'll see what the weather's like. Teams coming off a layoff this year have actually been bad. Teams coming off Monday Night Football have been good. For some reason, in the NFL this year, teams have struggled with the more rest they have had. They've been better on shorter weeks. I don't know why. So for Arizona, you're trying to go against that, coming off a bye and trying to play well on the road against Chicago. The big thing to watch in this game is if Kyler Murray does play, if DeAndre Hopkins does play, just what do they look like? For Murray, he's been out a month. Make sure they're 100%. You're 9-2. You don't have to rush these guys back, but you're going to need Kyler Murray if you want to get anything done this year. So let's see what he looks like after missing about a month. He should be able to play pretty well against the Bears, even on the road. As long as there's no weather, the Cardinals should be just fine against Chicago on the road this week.
Philadelphia Eagles at New York Jets.
This is another one. Look, this week we have, I think it's five road teams favored by a touchdown or more, which is the most for 1 week in the NFL in 60 years, which is probably to say all time. I don't know how many betting lines they had, 60 years ago. But this is another one of those. It's the Eagles against the Jets. It's the Eagles, even though they're under 500, they're much better than the Jets. They're favored by 7 on the road. What to look for in this game? If Jalen Hurts can bounce back, vice versa, I guess, if Zach Wilson can bounce back, two young quarterbacks. At least Jalen Hurts has shown some positives. Zach Wilson hasn't. So in this game for the Eagles, this is a must-win to keep up in the playoff race. You got to beat the Jets, even if you're on the road. But if you're the Eagles, you want to see Jalen Hurts play better than he did last week. That was ugly. And if you're the Jets, you're still looking just to see something positive from Zach Wilson. There's been very little this year that you can point to where you could say, oh, yeah, yep, he's our guy. Look at that play. Look at that sequence. Oh, that game he had. That's our guy. We haven't seen a whole lot of that. I'm not asking for a ton of wins or even a ton of touchdowns from Zach Wilson. Just show me something I can believe in, right? Even Trevor Lawrence, I say the same thing in Jacksonville. Show me some dynamic play that I can buy into. Ah, he's not ready yet. He's on a bad team. But, oh, yeah, when he shows those flashes, you know there's potential there. I see more of it with Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, but I got to see something from Zach. And now he goes up against an Eagles team that can get after the quarterback a little bit. And so it's a matchup of two young quarterbacks. We'll see which one plays slightly less worse, to phrase it that way. That'll be the one that wins on Sunday.
Jacksonville Jaguars at Los Angeles Rams.
It's a get-right spot for the Rams. They're at home. The Jags are coming to them. The Rams are favored by two touchdowns. They have not played well since the Robert Woods injury. They're 0-3. Matt Stafford has thrown a pick six in all of those three games. I think Charge yesterday in the show, and you can catch it on demand, he provided some interesting numbers or context, though, that maybe this isn't as easy of a matchup as you would think, because that Jaguars defense has actually been pretty good, especially against the pass. It's what has kept them in a lot of these games. But if you're the Rams, you're at home, you get Jacksonville, you've been scuffling, this is that get-right opportunity. You're favored by 13, you got to go out there and put it on them. And if not, somehow you lose to the Jags, or even if you scuffle at the Jags, right, we continue to worry about the Rams. But you have to show us that we should be taking you seriously, and you are one of the better teams in the NFC. They're only 7-4. Here's a chance to get that offense going, to get Stafford on the right track, to beat up on a Jaguars team that they're going to be, you know, they're like a pinata. They're just waiting to get pounded, and you have to be the ones to do it Sunday at home.
Washington football team at Las Vegas Raiders.
This is one of the more interesting games of the weekend. Washington football team, they're on a roll. They've won 3 in a row. They're now 5-6. The Raiders are coming off that nice win on Thanksgiving. They're 6-5. If I asked you, who leads the league in passing yards? How many guesses would it take for you to get the correct answer? Which is Derek Carr. I don't know if you were trying to think of it in your head, but did Derek Carr immediately jump to mind? Now, you may say, well, you know, usually it's the quarterbacks that are on the losing teams that have to throw it more, but the Raiders are 6-5. They're not Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars always playing from behind, or any other team, you know, Tyrod Taylor, he's been injured, of course, but any other quarterback on a bad team that has to throw it a bunch. The Raiders are 6-5, and even some of their losses were close games, and he leads the league in passing yards. And they're 6-0 when he has over 300 yards, 0-5 when he doesn't. This team goes the way of Derek Carr. Now he's at home on Sunday, not much of a home field advantage for Las Vegas. And you get a Washington team that the defense was bottom five to start the year, but now over this three-game winning streak, they're playing much better. So this could be a pretty good test for Carr. But it's a really interesting game because you have two teams here that are right in the middle of all those teams that are bunched up in the AFC and the NFC trying to get one of those final wild card spots. Two teams that need a victory. Last I saw the line, it's only a one-point spread. So Vegas sees these two teams as being pretty even. This has, over the last couple of weeks, become a more intriguing game, Washington against Las Vegas. And for the Raiders, it's pretty simple. They go the way of Derek Carr. If he plays well on Sunday, they'll probably win.
San Francisco 49ers at Seattle Seahawks.
This is one of those spots where you continue to count on the Seahawks to bounce back. Now, it's like the rubber band theory, right? The more you pull the rubber band, eventually you would expect it to shoot back, to fire back, to close up again. But the more you pull it, eventually it's also going to snap. So you wonder which way the team's going to go. After you lose now 3 in a row for the first time at Russell Wilson, is it eventually going to snap back? Like if you put a deck of cards inside a rubber band and you have the rubber band around the deck of cards and then you're pulling on it, right? If your finger slips off or whatever, you know what I'm talking about. The rubber band's going to shoot back onto the cards. But eventually, if you keep pulling on it and you wear down that rubber band, the more you pull on it, eventually you'll yank on it and it's going to break in two. For the Seahawks, are they going to clap back here against the Niners? They're at home as an underdog against a divisional team. Or eventually, is that rubber band going to keep getting yanked on where it just breaks apart? Seems like the Seahawks are moving in that direction. Things are getting ugly. Russell Wilson's been playing terribly since the finger injury. DK Metcalf has been a witness protection program. The defense isn't what it once was. They can't win a single game. I think the rubber band snaps with the Niners, but this could be a good bounce back spot for Seattle at home to try to find a way to win against the Niners team that they won't have Deebo Samuel. That's a big loss, but they have been getting healthier in other positions. They have been playing better. They're now 6-5. Jimmy Garoppolo, top three in QBR over the past month. Things are starting to come together for San Francisco. Now they're going to have to do it, though, Sunday on the road without Deebo.
San Francisco 49ers at Seattle Seahawks.
Next one. We just did that.
Baltimore Ravens at Pittsburgh Steelers.
Here's another one of those where you're counting on the bounce back. And that's for the Steelers. Now, I thought they were going to bounce back last week. They got blown out. So now I expect them to bounce back this week. Maybe I'm just waiting on something that's never going to happen. Right? You're outside waiting for the kids, waiting for the father, the deadbeat father, to come pick him up when he's never going to show up. Maybe I'm just going to continue. I'm going to wait all night for the Steelers to bounce back. It's never going to happen. But you have the Ravens at home. You just got embarrassed last week. The Ravens won a game when Lamar Jackson threw four interceptions. They became the first team to win a game when their quarterback throws four interceptions and win by more than three. All time, teams are something like 1-60 in that situation now that the Ravens have won. So you don't want to call it a fluke victory, but the Ravens, let's just say they were fortunate to win last week. Now they go on the road to Pittsburgh. This is the biggest rivalry in the division. Mike Tomlin, I would think, would have his guys fired up, especially after how they got embarrassed last week. But who knows? Maybe the Steelers team is quitting. Maybe they're shutting down. They're now 5-5-1. Ben Roethlisberger was lousy last week. Maybe they go out and lay another egg on Sunday. I do think they bounce back. I think Lamar Jackson has been too inconsistent to rely on. played lousy last week. Now he goes on the road against what is still a pretty good defense. And I think Pittsburgh, this is a chance for them to bounce back. You get this win, you're only about two games out of first in that division. You're still hanging around in the AFC North.
Denver Broncos at Kansas City Chiefs.
This is Sunday Night Football. Now, Paul Charchian, when he joined us yesterday, similar idea where, you know, you may be looking for Mahomes to be playing well, but this is a good Broncos defense. He gave some numbers that showcase why maybe you shouldn't expect Mahomes to have a big night. And the Broncos, they go to Kansas City. This is a huge game because Denver is one game behind the Chiefs. This is one of those that the NBC executives got this on the schedule originally, and they probably thought, oh, nice, this will be a good game. Then we got to, you know, the middle of October, and the Broncos started to lose games, and the Chiefs got off to a slow start, and they're looking ahead and thinking like, oh, man, this is going to be a turn out to be a bad game. And then these two teams now are playing better of late. And here we are this weekend, the weekend of the game. Broncos-Chiefs looks very interesting because the Broncos are only one game behind the Chiefs. If they win Sunday night, they'll be tied for first in the AFC West. Teddy Bridgewater is questionable. If they have to go with Drew Lock, this could be ugly. But if you roll with Teddy Bridgewater, he's really good as an underdog. He's really good as a road underdog. Can he win the game outright? I don't know. Can he make enough plays? I mean, that Chiefs defense has been really good towards the top of the league over the past month. Patrick Mahomes on the flip side, he's going up against a really good Broncos team. This is an intriguing matchup to me. I think that number is way too big. The Chiefs are favored by 10. They're only one game better than the Broncos, and the Chiefs just started playing better these last couple of weeks. They still have plenty of issues or concerns. But the Broncos, you win this game, you're in first place. Teddy Bridgewater, they call him Teddy Covers, right? He's really good. Teddy Underdog. And he's on the road with a good defense against Kansas City. Can they slow down the Chiefs enough to win? It's a fascinating Sunday night game.
New England Patriots at Buffalo Bills.
This is the game of the week, and it's on Monday night. So we'll talk more about this come Monday. But Patriots-Bills, Patriots have a half-game lead for first place. They have to go to Buffalo. It's a Monday night in December now. First time these two teams are facing each other this year. It's going to be a really interesting game. Biggest game for Mac Jones in his career. The Patriots' defense has been tremendous. They've won six in a row by an average of over 20 points. They go up against a Bills team that hasn't looked right this year, and the Bills' offensive line hasn't been very good. So the Patriots, you know, Bill Belichick is going to have some schemes for the Bills. The Bills have extra time to get ready for this coming off Thanksgiving. They'll be at home. It'll be Monday Night Football. The place will be crazy. But Belichick has always owned the Bills. He's done a good job against Josh Allen. He's got a good defense this year. I'm really looking forward to this game Monday night. I think it's the game of the weekend. It's a battle for first place. And it's one of those spots. This is kind of like Saban against Kirby Smart tomorrow, if we can circle everything back to the SEC title game. The Bills, you think on paper they're the better team. I know the Patriots have the better record. But the Bills, they're favored. They're the better team. But on the other side, you say, yeah, but there's Bill Belichick over there. Can we go against Bill Belichick in a big game? He's dominated the Bills over the years. And it's similar in the SEC title game. Georgia, they do have the better team than Alabama. But then you say, yeah, but can we really pick against Nick Saban in a game like this? I mean, he's owned Kirby Smart, 3-0, three comebacks. Do we think he's actually going to lose? We got a little bit of that going on with the Patriots-Bills Monday night. And we'll find out after the weekend what happens there. When we come back, I'll give you the most interesting games of the NFL slate. We just ran through all the games, but which ones stand out most? I'll let you know next. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Wish you a very merry cherry Christmas and a holly holy holiday too. Underneath your tree, may there always be sounds of harmony, not a song sung blue. Just a very merry cherry Christmas. And if all of those who love you gather near,
coming up,
you'll have a very
the most interesting
merry,
games
cherry,
of the
cherry,
NFL weekend.
Holly, holy,
just gave you my rundown of all of the NFL Christmas games this Sunday.
This year,
and last hour, we ordered the conference title games in college football by a level of intrigue. So if you ever miss anything from the show, such as either one of those breakdowns, you can find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Every Friday on the show, we always organize the football games. I give you a top five in terms of the five best games to watch. Well, we already kind of did that for college football. And you know around here we love lists. So we put the college football conference title games into a list. I gave you the order of the six most important games and the ones that should be the best to watch this weekend. So for our tasty top five, well, all we have left is the NFL. I just ran through all of these games, but now allow me to put them in a list. I guess it's therapeutic for the Mara Midday Show. We love lists. Here's the top five most interesting games to watch Sunday in the NFL.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the tasty top five.
I'm tasty.
Number five.
Washington football team against the Raiders. You have the Washington football team. Look out now. They've won three in a row. They're tied for that last wild card spot. And the Raiders, meanwhile, in the AFC, they're over 500 right there for one of those last wild card spots as well. I already told you that Derek Carr, the Raiders go the way of Carr. They're 6-0 and he passes for over 300 yards. But what's interesting about this matchup is he goes against Jack Del Rio, the defensive coordinator for Washington football team. Del Rio was Carr's coach for 3 years, so he may know where the bodies are hidden. Not only that, but Del Rio returns to take on the Raiders. He has the highest winning percentage for a Raiders coach since Tom Flores, and yet he got fired because the Raiders finally had a chance to bring back John Gruden. We know how that has worked out since for the Raiders. So for Del Rio, I'm sure he has a chip on his shoulder. He did a pretty good job. I don't know if he was deserving of a firing against or by the Raiders, so now he has a chance to go in there and beat them in their own building and knock them down a peg in their playoff hopes while Washington tries to continue their winning streak. So that will be the matchup to watch. Number four is Chargers-Bengals. The Chargers are trying to bounce back. The Bengals are trying to avoid an emotional letdown after that great performance a week ago. But what's the biggest thing about this game is just simply the quarterback matchup. Justin Herbert's really been up and down. I'm surprised to see he still leads the league in QBR. That's surprising to me. But it's Joe Burrow against Justin Herbert from the same draft class, both in their second year, both teams with winning records competing for playoff spots. This is a good, young quarterback matchup. In fact, maybe the best quarterback matchup of the weekend. Chargers-Bengals, number four. Number three of the games to watch this Sunday in the NFL, Ravens-Steelers. You know, the NFL, we don't have a lot of rivalries left. True rivalries. You have a few here and there, and this is probably the biggest one. Now, I'm a Vikings fan, so of course you have Vikings, Packers, Packers, Bears. I could say as a Vikings fan, right, I really dislike the Packers. We take that rivalry seriously. The Packers seem to as well. But same with the Ravens Steelers. There's not a ton of those true rivals left. They're not the same as they once were in the NFL. But Ravens Steelers seems to still be one. Now, this is the Steelers. You got to come out here. You lose this game, and especially if you lose it badly, I mean, you probably put a fork in them at that point. They just got blown out last week by another divisional team. Now you're at home against the Ravens, another divisional team. It's a rivalry game. You got to put together a better performance. Lamar Jackson, he too needs to put together a better performance. Four interceptions last week for Lamar. He's only faced Pittsburgh twice in his career, and in those two games, he has five interceptions and has been sacked nine times. So this is a chance for the Steelers to get after Lamar and make things difficult on Sunday in a game that Pittsburgh really needs to win. They need to bounce back. But it's a rivalry. They're always hard, physical games. The two sides don't like one another. For those reasons, I put it number three. Number two, you know, the NFL, they don't always get it right each week because you're trying to predict this usually months in advance. But the primetime schedule, I think, is really good for this weekend. In fact, they're the top two games. Chiefs-Broncos, Sunday Night Football is number two on my list. Patriots-Bills, Monday Night Football is number one. In terms of the Chiefs-Broncos, as I already laid out, it's a battle for first place. The Broncos win. They're tied with the Chiefs for first in the division. Now, the Chiefs have dominated this series. They have won 11 in a row against Denver. Three of the last four matchups have been by over 20 points. They're at home. It's Sunday Night Football. Broncos are coming to their place. Bridgewater's banged up. But this Chiefs team, obviously, they haven't been quite right this year compared to the last couple of seasons, you know, since Pat Mahomes took over as starter. And on the flip side, the Broncos, they do have a good, maybe still underrated defense. So I know the Chiefs are favored by 10. I think it's going to be a closer game than that, and I think it could be an intriguing game on Sunday Night Football, which takes me to number one, Monday Night Football, Patriots-Bills. It's the game of the weekend. It's a battle for first place in the AFC East. The Patriots are trying to continue their winning streak. Plus, just think about it. Bills Mafia, Monday Night Football in Buffalo, place going crazy. It's December. I would appreciate a nice little flurry. Maybe we get a little snowstorm in there as well. I always love watching a good snow game on a cold December night somewhere else, as long as it's not cold where I am. And Bill Belichick has been really good against Buffalo, but Josh Allen, there's something still off about the Bills. If you don't watch the Bills and you just look at the box score and the record, you think like, oh, yeah, they're one of the better teams again. But when you actually sit down and watch them, you see something's not quite clicking. Again, almost like Alabama, because we can connect everything back to this SEC title game. When you watch Alabama this year, if you actually sit down and watch them week after week, you see like, yeah, something's off here. This is not the same Alabama team you're used to. This is not the same. The Bills are not playing as well as they did last year. And Josh Allen, playing behind a shaky offensive line, he has 8 turnovers over the last 4 games. And now he goes up against a Patriots defense that is number 1 in the league in interceptions. So, could be a tough matchup for Josh Allen. You know Belichick's going to cook something up, and they'll be able to get after Josh. And if they force him into a couple of turnovers, that could be the difference in the game. He's been prone to turnovers once again this year. But Mac Jones on Monday Night Football, biggest game of his career on the road in Buffalo. The battle for first place. Should be a fun Monday Night Football game. You know, Monday Night Football, obviously when it first started, it was a huge deal. I remember even when I was growing up, it was still a big deal. And then somewhere in the past, maybe decade, things have changed where Monday Night Football, you look forward to it, right? I wish there was football every night. But it doesn't have the same big feel like it once did. Used to live for the theme song. And remember back about 15 years ago when they used to do the skits? And then Terrell Owens did the one with the Desperate Housewives when they were all like in the shower together. And I think that kind of put, that was the one that put an end to it. But it was a big deal. Like you had to be at the TV. You had to watch Monday Night Countdown. You had to see Jacked Up. You had to see the intro to Monday Night Football. You had to hear that week's theme song. And then the game was a big deal and it felt big. That's not the case anymore. But this Monday night, Patriots Bills in Buffalo, December night, battle for first place. It has that big game feel, which is great for Monday Night Football. And those are the 5 most interesting games of Sunday in the NFL. I remember, you'd always want to stay up. You could stay up for the first half back when you were a kid, when you were young. Oh, only the first half. And then when it's halftime, that was the worst. You knew you had to go to bed. You wouldn't see how the game would finish. Thank goodness they start these games a little bit earlier now. Back then, they used to start them about 9 o'clock. They go after midnight. Now, it is closer to 8. But it was always a big deal. Not so much anymore for Monday Night Football, but this Monday night, I do think, will be a big deal. Coming up, fake accents and a theory I have that may not be good news for Notre Dame. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, why things may not work out for Notre Dame with their new head coach. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Just gave you the 5 most interesting games of the NFL Sunday this weekend. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always find everything on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. I touched on the coaching change for Notre Dame, Wednesday, again yesterday, with Marcus Freeman being announced as the head coach. And Marcus Freeman checks a lot of the boxes. Now, he's a first-time head coach. He's a young guy, only 35 years old. But the players like him. He's had success as a defensive coordinator. He's a good recruiter. Obviously was there this year under Brian Kelly. So it's almost like when you try to pluck from the Saban or Belichick coaching tree, you figure, well, we can't get that guy, so let's get the closest thing. And in the case here, it's like, well, we lost Brian Kelly. All right, well, let's get the next closest. Marcus Freeman was his defensive coordinator. Let's just promote him. He's ready for the gig. He's been watching how Brian Kelly operated around here. So I think Marcus Freeman does check a lot of the boxes. I also think it speaks to maybe the situation Notre Dame is in where Brian Kelly bails for a better chance to win a national championship. And maybe Notre Dame knows, like, yeah, we're not going to be able to go out and get a big name. So our best chance is giving this guy his first opportunity who's already in the building. I don't know, maybe coaches, maybe people in college football view Notre Dame differently now than years past, because it is harder now to win a national championship. You can win there. You can win 10 games. You can make it to the playoff. But once you arrive, can you win those biggest games to actually go all the way and finish it off with a championship? Marcus Freeman, that will now be his task. He's next up for Notre Dame. But I was thinking about this last night, because on paper, I do like the Marcus Freeman hire. But I've always had this thought process in college football, or just football in general, that I think you need to go offensive when you hire your new coach. And the main reason, there's two reasons to it. Number one is because the sport is moving in such an offensive direction that that's your attempt to keep up. But also number two is because if you hire a defensive coach, let's say Oklahoma hires Brent Venables, you then also have to nail the offensive coordinator higher. And if you do, you assume if you did a good enough job, well, he's not going to be there that long with you, because that offensive coordinator is going to do such a good job, he's going to get plucked away and go somewhere else. So then you're going to have to find another good offensive coordinator, and then another one. And that is such an important position, because offense is so important now in football. Whereas if you hire an offensive coach and he's running the offense, say you hire Lane Kiffin, all right, come hire his offensive coordinators all you want. It doesn't change anything for the offense. That's still Lane's offense. All right, hire his defensive coordinators. That's okay, because we still have Lane, who is a wizard offensively, and we want to be better offensively than defensively, because that seems to be how you still win today. Right, that's the more important side of the football in football nowadays. So it's like, all right, fine. It sucks that we lose a good defensive coordinator, but more importantly, we still have Lane and his offense. I mean, point in case, Ole Miss this year is a top 10 team with the third worst defense in the SEC. Didn't make a difference, because they were good enough offensively to still win a bunch of games. And they were good enough offensively because Lane Kiffin. So I always think it's the easier path to hire the offensive coach. But then I was thinking about this. Well, what has history shown us? Think back in college football. When you promote a coach from the staff and he becomes a head coach for the first time, right? You lose your head coach, and instead of going out and finding someone else, you promote one of your coordinators. How has that worked out in recent years? Well, for teams that have promoted an offensive coach, it's worked out pretty well. Lincoln Riley, Ryan Day, Dabo Swinney, Chris Peterson, even David Shaw. I would say Mike Gundy, Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. Worked out pretty well. All right, what about defense? When you promote the defensive coordinator, how have things worked out? Well, Jimmy Lake at Washington just got fired after a year and a half. Bob Davie at Notre Dame, they've tried this before. They promoted their defensive coordinator after Lou Holtz left. First-time head coach Bob Davie didn't work out. He was there for 5 years, was 500, got fired. Luke Fickell, he was an interim. But when Ohio State needed a head coach after the Jim Tressel stuff and before Urban Meyer came along, they said, hey, we got this Luke Fickell guy, right? Okay, let's make him the coach. They had a losing season. And after 1 year, all right, let's go get Urban Meyer. This didn't work. How's Manny Diaz working at Miami? He was the defensive coordinator. Mark Richt steps aside. They said, all right, well, let's promote Manny Diaz. He may not make it to next year. They're hiring a new AD. So when you look at the offensive coaches, even historically, Larry Coker was the offensive coordinator, became the head coach for the first time at Miami. Barry Switzer, Bill Battle, offensive coaches who stepped into the head coaching role, first time as a head coach, and had success. You can even say Mario Cristobal. He was not a first-time head coach, but when Oregon needed a new coach, they promoted Mario Cristobal. That's worked out pretty well. Before that, it was Mark Helfrich, who overall didn't have a great tenure at Oregon, but he did take him to a national championship in his second year. Replacing Chip Kelly, he was Chip's offensive coordinator. They said, all right, let's bump him up. And so it kind of goes along with my theory that when you lose that head coach, you have better success promoting the offensive coordinator, because you probably had your success based off of offense, right? It was Jimbo Fisher and his offense at Florida State. It was Ryan Day and his offense at Ohio State. It was Lincoln Riley and his offense at Oklahoma. Instead of promoting the defensive coordinator and then having to figure out the offense. Which is why the good thing for Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame is that he kept the offensive coordinator. I think that's the bigger hire. And if this works out with Notre Dame, it will be because you kept Tommy Rees calling the plays. You kept that continuity on offense. Normally, when you promote the defensive coach, he's got to go find an offensive coordinator. So maybe This does work because you were able to keep the offensive coordinator. But Notre Dame has done this before. They have hired three first-time head coaches in the last 60 years. None of them worked. All three lasted exactly 5 years. And of those 15 total seasons, Notre Dame was ranked at any time during that season just four times in the 15 years. Not good enough for Notre Dame. First-time head coaches have not worked at Notre Dame. When they promoted their defensive coordinator, they did it once with Bob Davie in the 90s, did not work. They're trying it now with Marcus Freeman. But the difference may be, like I said, he keeps the offensive coordinator, because that's usually not the case. Usually when you promote those defensive guys, they may not keep the offensive coordinator, or the offensive coordinator maybe isn't worth keeping to begin with. But when you go back and you look, when you promote the offensive coordinator or any offensive coach, Dabo wasn't calling plays, but he worked on the offense. When you promote that offensive coach, you have more success. Lincoln Riley, Ryan Day, Dabo, Chris Peterson, Mike Gundy, who may go to the playoff this year, Jimbo Fisher won a national championship. Mark Helfrich at least got to a national championship. Mario Cristobal's done really well at Oregon. The defensive coaches, not so much. The one exception may be Ed Orgeron. He did win a national championship. Hard to take that away. But he also just got fired, and I think outside of that national championship, LSU fans would say his tenure was a bit of a disappointment. And when he won that national championship, it wasn't because of Ed Orgeron. It wasn't even because of the defense. It was because of the offensive coordinator, Joe Brady. LSU fans probably wish you kept Joe Brady and moved on from Ed O after that national championship game. You'd be in a better spot. If you look at the NFL, interim coaches in the NFL that then became full-time head coaches. And I'm not telling you these coaches were very good to begin with, but if you go back and you look at the ones that have actually won playoff games, Jason Garrett, offensive coordinator, Mike Tice, offensive coordinator. They're the last two. Otherwise, Romeo Crennel, defensive coach, did not work out. Leslie Frazier, defensive coach, did not work out. Mike Singletary, defensive coach, did not work out. Dick LeBeau, Dave McGinnis, didn't work out. Never won a playoff game. Jeff Fisher is probably the last one, and that's going back 25 years. The last time a team promoted a defensive coordinator, and he really worked out. Jeff Fisher got the Titans to a Super Bowl. We see it a lot. I think it's the way to go in football that if you're hiring, you should hire an offensive coach. And if you're hiring from your own staff, and you had to pick a side. Okay, where are we going to keep the continuity? On offense or on defense? It's probably the smarter bet to choose offense, to keep your offensive coordinator instead of your defensive coordinator if you had to pick one of the two. But again, for Notre Dame in this case, the great thing is they picked defense. They said, we're going to keep Freeman, but you made sure to also keep your offensive coordinator as well. And that could be a big boost for them. Maybe that makes all the difference in the world. We'll see. Meanwhile, we don't have enough time. I don't want to get into it now because we probably won't get through it all. But Brian Kelly, of course, just left Notre Dame. Marcus Freeman's replacing Brian Kelly. And boy, did Brian Kelly have an interesting moment at LSU. All right, yeah, let's try to squeeze this in before the top of the hour. Here is Brian Kelly. He was introducing himself to the crowd at the LSU basketball game. Listen closely to how he says these words in his hello to the LSU fans.
LSU, thank you. Thank you. Well, this is a great way to get started, and I haven't even won all my games yet. It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans, and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
What is this accent? I forget who it was that tweeted out, Brian Kelly spends 2 days in Louisiana, and now he's talking like Dusty Rhodes. Jeff Darlington did a great job, Jeff Darlington of ESPN. He took the clip from 2 days ago, the way that Kelly said family at Notre Dame, and then the way he said it last night, spliced them together. Let's compare the two, how Kelly's been saying the word family this week.
It's incredible 12 years of my life, for me and my family, being here at Notre Dame.
It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited in the great state of Louisiana.
What do you think? Is Brian Kelly trying to do a southern accent here? Is he trying to talk as if he's from the area?
It's as phony as those Hollywood southern accents.
It's not good. Hey, I tell you what, I've lived in the South for 7 years. I've never tried, almost eight now, I've never tried to speak differently. You say you don't like how I say Bengals. I still say it like Bengals anyways. I've never tried a Southern accent. But it goes to what I've been saying about Brian Kelly. I think it's very important to hire coaches from that region. And Brian Kelly is a Boston guy. He should be talking with a Boston accent, which is on the other end of the spectrum. He's been coaching in the Midwest, and now he comes to Louisiana. He's here for 48 hours, or there, in Louisiana for 48 hours, and he's talking with a little bit of that Southern twang. What's up with that? It's like a politician. Right? And his father was a politician, by the way, so Brian Kelly may have learned from the best, but trying to fit in. He's going to be talking about gumbo and po' boys and all the other the food scene in Louisiana now. Try to fit in, recruit some of these kids. That's what you have to do. More on this coming up. What are the worst fake accents? Where does Brian Kelly rank? Plus, I'll give you my picks for the weekend. And we'll continue to get ready for the conference championship games. Hour 3 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.